Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Lynn S. and I am a recovered compulsive overeater and your moderator for this morning. Today is Monday, April 20th, 2026, and we are continuing our study of the Big Book. We're in the chapter more about alcoholism, and we're on page 32, the very first paragraph. Though there is no way of proving it. And we're reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are the 12 Steps, Melissa S., the 12 Traditions, Mary C., and readers of the text, Robin P., Jessica C., and Nancy P. The reference number for yesterday, Sunday, April 19th, our special edition, is 23379. That's 23379. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And this morning, Melissa S. is going to read the 12 steps for us. Good morning, Melissa.
Good morning. This is Melissa S. from New Jersey. The 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. Thanks for letting me do service.
Thank you, Melissa S. And Mary C. is going to read the 12 traditions. Good morning, Mary.
Good morning. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Mary C. in Italy. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And here are the traditions of Overeaters Anonymous, the 12 traditions, that is. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related outside facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous had no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for letting me be of service.
Thank you, Mary C. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass. Then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today we're resuming our study of the Big Book, and we're in the chapter More About Alcoholism. On page 32, the very first paragraph, though there is no way of proving it. And this morning, Robin T. is going to get us started. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you so much for your service. I'm Robin P., and I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and I'm in Franklin, Tennessee. Though there's no way of proving it, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. But the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. We've heard of a few instances where people who showed definite signs of alcoholism were able to stop for a long period because of an overpowering desire to do so. Here is one. So I was thinking about that this last night, and I was thinking, you know, I just needed the food so much. And that mental obsession combined with the physical allergy meant that until I was ready, there was nothing I could do until I hit bottom. I was done. And when I work with people, I ask, you know, what was asked of me, are you willing to go to any length to recover? And I said, yes. And I've asked people that and asked them to pray that. And when I thought, oh my gosh, it has to be their bottom. They can't walk. They're in a wheelchair. They're hundreds of pounds overweight. And they would come back and say they didn't think they were done. And I just, everyone's bottom. And all I could say was, well, just pray to hit bottom and I'll pray for you. And, you know, the door is always open. And, you know, just I have so much compassion for that because I remember instances, you know, where I just needed the food. I grew up in a lot of trauma, and I just remember thinking, I just need to numb. And I was mostly bulimic, and at times I was anorexic and then compulsive overeater, but I remember trying to be anorexic more than bulimic, and I just needed the numb so badly I couldn't hold out. And, you know, these past 10 years so far, these 10 years and ongoing, by God's grace and mercy, I'm so grateful that I have a solution today where, you know, I get to have, I feel like it's a positive mood change without the consequence. You know, when I use the tools and when I use the steps, when I do a 10-step, I get so much relief. And I'm a blessing to, you know, everyone in my family to stay spiritually fit, and everyone in my community, because I get to be of service. And, you know, there's no consequence. I get that positive mood change without a dire consequence, and I get to grow spiritually and keep growing spiritually. And one other thing I just wanted to say is that, you know, I was thinking about that mental obsession and the physical allergy. You know, I found the foods that don't work for me today. I mean, I actually eat whole food, plant-based, and I'm gluten-free, and I don't eat poison to the best of my ability. Poison wasn't good for me. And, you know, I do my best to, that food is my medicine instead of my poison. And that's today because I am sane because of these steps in this program. And I just reach up and reach out. And God bless everybody with a really blessed, abstinent day. Thanks so much for letting me share.
Thank you for getting us started, Robin P. The line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared yesterday or the day before, which would be, I guess, Thursday or Friday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share this morning?
Lisa B. in South Carolina.
Adam K. from New Jersey.
Peggy W. from Wisconsin.
I heard Lisa B. and Adam K. I'm sorry, that's all I got. Who was the other person?
Peggy W.
Okay, I've got Lisa B., Adam K., Peggy W. Who did I miss?
Shanna C., did you get me?
I got you now. Thank you, Shanna.
Thank you.
Okay, so far our lineup is Lisa B., Adam K., Peggy W., Shanna C. Who else would like to share this morning, please?
Darlene H.
Is that Darlene?
Yes.
Darlene H., great. Anyone else?
Excuse me, could
Bonnie B.
Was Robin P. or B. who spoke?
Robin P., as in Peter.
Thank you.
Gotcha here, Bonnie. That was Bonnie B., right?
That's correct, Lynn. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we have our lineup. Thank you, everybody. We've got Lisa B., Adam K., Peggy W., Shanna C., Darlene H., and Bonnie B. So good morning, Lisa. And can you tell us where you're calling from? And I think that's L-E-S-A, isn't it, Lisa B.?
That's right. Thank you.
Good morning.
My name is Lisa B., and I'm a grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater, and I'm calling from South Carolina. Thank you for your service, and thank you, Robin, for your lead. I'm so grateful to be in this passage, well, in this chapter. This is such an amazing chapter, more about alcoholism, more about relapse, more about thinking, more about the disease. And, you know, what stands out for me when it says the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there is yet time. So that yet, it's speaking of the progression, the deadly progression, chronic, progressive, fatal. And, you know, so early on, it was fun for me. It was recreation. It was my friend. It took the edge off. I mean, I really loved it. I loved to zone out, that hand-to-mouth motion, my hand in the bag, or just volume, like massive quantities. And I really felt like I had power over it because I could always then just compulsively exercise. I didn't purge with bulimia, like sticking my fingers down my throat yet. I do believe that's a yet. But I would through compulsive exercise, diets. I mean, I spent so much of my time on the internet or reading, studying diets. You know, I really felt like I could have been a nutritionist. I just studied about food and combinations, and it just was something I was totally obsessed with. And it took up my time. It filled up time for me. Compulsive eating. So if I was bored, I could always just compulsively eat. I felt like it helped me with creative projects. If I had a bad day or was angry or depressed or just wanted to zone out. So the progression is there. And then it just, all of a sudden, it was like one day I couldn't stop. I mean, I crossed over this line and I experienced not being able to stop binge eating. And it was frightening. And I would went to treatment for that and everything. And then I just worshiped a food plan. But meanwhile, the disease continues to progress and grow. So today, being in recovery through this big book, through abstinence, and learning about the very specific way of going through the steps as it's laid out in the big book, you know, starting with the doctor's opinion, having a spiritual experience. Today, recovery is progressive, you know, and I do this happily. When I came here, I couldn't believe that people had long-term abstinence and they did it happily. I used to think when you're abstinent, you're recovered. No, it's a whole other thing. That's the key to get in the door. It's the spiritual awakening that I so desperately need. So I'm so grateful today to be here and to have abstinence, to have recovery, to have neutrality, and to do this happily. Thank you. I pass.
Thank you, Lisa B. in South Carolina, and that's Lisa, L-E-S-A. Next, we have Adam K., followed by Peggy W. Good morning, Adam, and where are you calling from, please?
Good morning, everybody. Adam K., compulsive overeater in New Jersey. When I read this passage, what I see is that the trap of addiction is structural rather than moral. The alcoholic, and thus the overeater, theoretically could have stopped early because the disease hadn't fully taken hold yet. The window to stop was there, but the very nature of addiction is that it doesn't generate enough desire to stop until it's already too late to stop easily. And you know, the disease eats the antidote first. And so willpower requires wanting to use it, and alcoholism and by extension compulsive overeating specifically erodes the want. And the rare exceptions prove the rule. The people who stopped early despite showing signs didn't have better character. They, according to what I'm reading, had some kind of outside pressure generating an overpowering desire. You know, whether it's a business goal or your wife tells you that you got to stop, or something outside the bottle or the food that mattered more. And that desire wasn't from the inside, because the story immediately following shows what happens the moment that outside pressure disappears. The person drinks again within months of retirement because the borrowing desire has expired. And the logical implication is that you can't reason your way, I can't reason my way, into wanting abstinence while the disease is active. Because the very thing that I've used to want it, the honest self-appraisal and the clear desire and the accurate perception of the consequences, is exactly the thing that the food corrupts. And so the overeater who could have stopped is exactly the one who didn't believe that he needed to. And that's, to me, why the program can't be self-generated. I can't bootstrap a desire that I don't have. Something outside, a higher power, being desperate enough, having a sponsor in meetings, that has to create the overpowering desire that the disease itself is never going to produce in time. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Adam K. from New Jersey. Next up, we have Peggy W., followed by Shanna C. Hi, Peggy.
Hi, Peggy W. from Wisconsin. And I really like this topic here. I couldn't stop eating. Once I passed that threshold of becoming a overeater, there was no going back for me. I remember at the end of my addiction before I realized that food addiction was even a thing. I fought with myself on a daily. And now I'm just surrendering myself to this every single morning, talking to my higher power and asking him to give me the power. And I tell you, there's something to be said for that. I think just knowing that, yeah, cross that line. There's no going back. And I don't even want to go back at this point. I just want to keep going forward. I just finished my third step with my sponsor, and I just feel amazing. Like, just want to keep going forward and making better connections and doing my homework. And I tell you, this is like a full-time job. You have to be very committed to, you know, working these steps. It really is a full-time job. There's a lot of thinking that goes in this. There's a lot of, relief. Relief that I'm getting healthier. And that just makes me, I'm at a peace right now, and that's all I know. And with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Peggy W. Shanna C., good morning. It's your turn, followed by Darlene H.
Good morning. Thank you, Lynn. This is Shanna C., grateful recovered compulsive overeater from East Tennessee, back in East Tennessee now, and grateful for it. I was in Jacksonville, Florida at Mayo Clinic for, I'm traveling back and forth because of some pretty good health problems that through the grace of God and these directions in this book and the help I'm receiving and stuff, I've been able to remain abstinent and recovered throughout it despite great pressure and difficulty. So those are some promises that are coming true in my own life, and I'm so grateful for it. That said, this paragraph here, I'm so grateful for the very first sentence here where it says, though there is no way of proving it. You know, I don't know about anybody else, but I'm the kind of person that tries to prove myself exception to the rule. So this is kind of like giving me the answer here from the get-go. There's no way of proving that I could have stopped eating early on, because the difficulty is that that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there's still yet time. I don't know that I ever really understood what compulsive overeating was and what it wasn't, because pretty much from the time I was young, I overate. Like, overeating was the norm. And I'm one that was able to slip through the cracks quite often because I'm so tall. I'm 5'10", and, you know, extra weight on me doesn't look that bad. By the time I actually had the overwhelming desire to stop eating, I didn't have people coming at me saying, "Shanna, you need to lose weight," or making fun of me anymore. And I don't mean to sound like conceited at all. What I'm saying is there are so many very attractive people on the line this morning that slip through the cracks because they don't carry huge amounts of weight and they're not being told that. And so grateful that this process also removes my dependence upon people and enables me to see the truth about myself. And the special edition that was shared yesterday, I highly, highly, highly recommend for this reason, because it really does speak to what am I actually conceding to in my innermost self, you know, that I'm a compulsive overeater, and what does that really look like for me? So that was really helpful. One of the most overwhelming power times in my life where I had overwhelming power to stop eating compulsively was after my mother was murdered. What I used was the extreme restriction because, I don't know, it numbed me out. It helped me to, you know, do whatever, and I lost tons and tons and tons of weight after that. And, you know, it ended up coming back, but it took me getting to the point where I saw I couldn't imagine life with or without food. I couldn't manage being thin, couldn't manage being fat, couldn't manage Thank you. And then I couldn't manage any of it. It was just a nightmare. and so grateful that you guys were here to show me how to live differently and use food the way it's intended. Anyway, that's all I have. Happy Monday, everyone, and that's it.
Thank you, Shanna C. from Tennessee. Darlene H., it's your turn, followed by Bonnie B. Good morning, Darlene.
Good morning. This is Darlene H., recovered in Virginia. Lynn, thank you very much for your service. I'm grateful to be at a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. What spoke to me about this paragraph is, as been said, this, we can't prove it. And for years in this program, I thought that I had surrendered and was recovered. You know, I started eating emotionally at a young age, probably around the age of 9 or 10, and I found my way, and I did not stop, and I found my way to Overeaters Anonymous when I was 33 years old and 260 pounds, and I thought, this is it. And I joined, I didn't know any better, I joined a very, what I would call strict tool-based OA meeting. And it worked. I got abstinent, lost 140 pounds, life got better. And I literally stayed abstinent for 5.5 years until life got really, really hard and I broke. But the thing about that was that that was 26 years ago that I came into this program and I found that abstinence and life changed. And for, you know, 20 years, I was chasing that same abstinence again. You know, I would break, gain weight, do the steps, break, gain weight, do the steps. And what really needed, I had to understand that this is a spiritual program. I'm never going to get that abstinence back again because it was not a healthy abstinence for me. It was tool-based, not spiritual-based, not God-focused. And God has to be the beginning of everything. And it's not about my weight, you know. It's about where I am in peace of mind, where I am with a power greater than myself. Am I running the show or am I turning it over? It can get worse. It may not be. I may not be done. I may think that I'm done. I may not be. But I do know that as long as I stay in touch with a power greater than myself, continue to work steps 10, 11, and 12, you know, I'll be okay. It's really that simple. And God, you know, complication is the way it is, right? That's the way I like to make it. Yesterday, I got a call that my stepmother was in the hospital. She's my last living parental figure. And it shot fear through me like nobody's business. You know, and today my ego has to be set aside. And I happened to be in a 12-step meeting at the time. And I raised my hand and said, before I leave this room, I need to tell you all I'm in fear, and this is what I'm afraid of. And I've said my prayer, and I pray that you will pray for her too, and then I look for ways to be helpful to somebody else. And she's
time, please.
Okay. And I'm grateful for that. I didn't have to pick up a bite. Thank you. Have a good day.
Thank you, Darlene H. from Virginia. And next up is Bonnie B. Good morning, Bonnie.
Hey, good morning, Lynn. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for the shares. They've been amazing. You know, it was my full-time job. Sorry, Bonnie B. from Florida, recovered by the grace of God today. This was my full-time job. It was what I did. And the idea of, like, proving that I could have stopped, I wasn't in a position where I either wanted to or knew I could. It was just what I did. This is how I coped with life. When it worked, great. When it didn't, as others had said back on the internet, finding other people, looking for different ways that maybe I could come at it again. I did not know this was my DNA. I didn't know that I didn't have a dieting issue. I have an emotional sobriety issue, disconnected from God and looking for that peace of mind that only food gave me at that stage in my life. Food, and then I'll attach it to over-exercising and I never purged. But I definitely did a lot of the behaviors And the behaviors are just the behaviors. Again, it was my way of trying to numb out life because I couldn't control so many pieces of my life. And so this felt like I could control this, but I couldn't control this either. And so it became my full-time occupation. Do I think it would have gotten worse? Absolutely. I don't know of anyone that ever stopped before they got to this point because I didn't know I needed to stop. I didn't know what the problem was, and I didn't know what the solution was either, and that's sort of a problem for someone in my position. I just knew that I couldn't stop once I started, and I couldn't stop from starting, and man, I had to hide it. And so the lying, the deceiving, the covering, the stealing, the replacing, that was my full-time job. The shame, the guilt, that was my full-time job. And it did go from bad to worse. It wasn't until I came into this program and I sat in the room and someone described, you know, the DNA, read the doctor's opinion, and I thought, oh my word, this is me. This is me. And the idea of me being able to stop prior to that point, you know, it's sort of a mute like question for me. It doesn't really matter because I didn't know anything other than what I knew. And so, you know, the why behind it, we hear all the time, it doesn't matter. It's part of my DNA, and the gift is that I have stepped into a program that offers a solution, and the solution is always going to be draw back to God, connect to your Savior. Figure out what it is, you know, what it's not. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks so much.
Later, just to let you know where we are, we're continuing our study of the big book, and we're in the chapter more about alcoholism on page 32, the first paragraph, though there is no way. So the line is now open for sharing on what we just read. Although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you shared on Thursday or Friday, please step back and let others have their turn. And please say your name just once. It does help me hear everybody. Who would like to share?
Ruth S. from Baltimore. Oregon.
GDN. Okay, I heard somebody from Baltimore.
That was Judy N.
Rivka.
Oh, that was Judy N. Okay.
No,
so
no,
is that it's
Rivka R. also.
Okay.
Rivka R.
Okay, so we've got Judy N., Rivka R., Kimberly K.
Ken S. from Oregon.
Ken W.H. Who else, please? I've got Judy N., Rivka R., Kimberly K., Ken W.H. Who did I miss?
Liz S. from Oregon.
Got you, Liz. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else that I missed? No? Okay, here we go then. Judy N., it's your turn, followed by Rivka R. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning, Lynn. Thank you for your service. I'm Judy N., living recovered one day at a time in Maryland. And I wanted to share today because this paragraph just resonates with me. I always believed that I was not a normal eater when it came to certain foods. And I could stop. I stopped through pay and way. I stopped because emotionally it was very depressing for me. I began to isolate. I was living in negativity. I really didn't like myself when I looked in the mirror. All those kind of outside, external influences. So I would stop for a period of time, but it was due to false dependencies. In other words, all the shoulds and what people would think of me and everything outside of me enabled me to stop. And then when I would reach my goal or over a period of time, sure enough, I would pick up again because nothing had changed internally. And that was years and years of living that way on a yo-yo with my weight and my mental health and living by my will and not knowing really any better until I went through the steps, until I went into Vision for You in OA and I was willing to do the work. But initially, I think, look at it like another sort of pay and way. Let me just go through and do the work. And I was abstinent because my desire was strong. And I was used to being abstinent for periods of time. But then going through the steps, finally, with God putting a sponsor in front of me that I needed, and this was actually after my mother died, I did the work. And I wanted to go deeper and deeper. Something inside of me was really trying to connect and depend on God. And that's my real dependency. And over a period, it was slow for me, slow and steady and consistent, but not perfect, but one day at a time, something was changing, subtle, my thoughts were changing. My attitudes were changing. The 10th steps, the 11th, the 12th step, as best as I could be of service. Over one day at a time, I started to depend on God. I will not mind be done. I understood humility through the readings, the big book, the AA 12 and 12, everything, other spiritual readings. Going through the steps more than one time. I don't have to. Relapse to go through the steps again. I just feel it emotionally. Something tells me, oh, you know what? Go in and get refueled. Go through the steps again. I have to stay connected to my higher power. And that has made all the difference in understanding that, and that brings up the striving to change internally, to stay out of my character defects, to live aligned. My will must be aligned to God's will, the ideals of God and the steps. Thank you so much. I pass.
Thank you, Judy N. from Maryland. Next up is Rivka R., followed by Kimberly K. Good morning, Rivka.
Good morning, Lynn. Am I still unmuted?
Yep.
Okay, great. It's Rivka R., gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Baltimore, Maryland. And thank you, Lynn, for your service and all the wonderful shares this morning. So the thing that I was struck by was that first sentence when it says, we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking, but the difficulty is that few alcoholics have enough desire to stop while there's still yet time. I think that's one of the differences between me and at least the kind of compulsive overeater that I am and an alcoholic is that, alcoholics don't start drinking from birth. And I had to start, drinking from birth. I wasn't breastfed, I was formula fed, and, that even today has sugar and corn syrup in it, and even breast milk, I understand, is sweet. I'm not blaming the formula or the breast milk, but because I do believe that my brain was actually wired from birth to be a compulsive overeater, because my obsession with food from a very early age, 3 years old, it was so complete, I knew that my relationship with food was really different from people who didn't seem to care about the food that they were eating. So I don't think I could have ever had a desire to stop eating. The only thing I had a desire for was to be thin. And then I was caught in this terrible dilemma. I had no desire to stop eating, but I had every desire to be thin. And it was just miserable. And I went to any lengths to be thin, but I couldn't keep off the weight for more than a few hours. So I needed a whole brain rewiring. And even being in and out of program for 3 decades and doing the steps, it's really these vision meetings that, have modeled how to have a relationship with my creator that's about trust and reliance and surrender and abandoning myself. And, that's really begun to rewire my brain so that my desire today is not to do what disconnects me from God. And more than being thin and compulsive overeating is the fastest way, the selfishness, the self-centeredness, the resentment, the all those things, you know, those things disconnect me faster than anything. And so I wanted to share something that, you know, I heard that was just really impactful to me, which is that a faith is on the past. Like, I have every faith that whatever happened in my life was totally meant to be the way it was meant to be. And trust is on the future, that I trust that whatever is going to be is for my benefit and is the way that it needs to be. And action is on today, that I need to take the actions that keep me in connection with my Creator. And I know that was like, just blew my mind, just thinking about that, you know, that...
Time, please.
Okay, I'll end with that. Thanks so much, Lynn. That I'm just grateful to be in that place today. Everyone have a blessed day. Thanks.
Thank you. Rivka R. from Maryland. Kimberly K., good morning. It's your turn, followed by Ken W.H.
Good morning, everyone. Can I be heard? I think I did it.
Yes, thank you.
Hello?
Yep, we hear you.
Okay. I can't hear you. Okay. Good morning, everyone. My name is Kimberly K. from New Hampshire, and I am a grateful recovering compulsive overeater. I am so struck every paragraph that we read, you know, and I pencil everything. I should be good and dead, and you know, where it says we believe that early in our drinking careers, most of us could have stopped drinking. I missed that in my life. And I do believe that it was all a God incident that I came back into OA and that I'm just drowning in the big book, not drowning in a negative way, but just, whoa, more about my disease. And what a gift. I find it a God incident. And I once heard it said that many are called to the disease, few are chosen. And I do believe I've been chosen, you've been chosen. I just believe that God had a really amazing plan for me so that I wouldn't die, even though there were many stop signs of, you know, you take care of yourself, whatever they were. I pretty much knew that I was gaining, and I had gained that very not vibrant face, you know, the glow, the je de vie. I was really in the muck of thinking I was okay, even though pictures would tell me differently. My attitude and responses were different. And with the grace of God, truly the grace of amazing grace from God, I'm on my road to recovering, and it's a beautiful place to be. So I wish everybody a marvelous Monday, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Kimberly K. from New Hampshire. Ken W.H., it's your turn, followed by Liz S. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. Thank you. This is Ken W.H., recovered compulsive overeater from North Carolina. I understand that I have a disease in my body, and it's called compulsive overeating. And if I have a disease, I need to find something, or I need to be given something that will arrest that disease, put it into remission, if you will, but it doesn't go away. I remain a compulsive overeater. And in a parallel would be when I was diagnosed with a cancer, and I was in the doctor's office, and he was doing the exam and found the tumor, he said, after immediately stopped the exam, and he says, I operate on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. And I said, what? No, you can't, because that's our anniversary. You can't do that. He says, I operate on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. About as much time as I had to admit I had cancer. I had to admit it now, and it was taken care of. Well, I have a disease called compulsive eating. I have to admit now, if I in fact do have this disease and am told so in one way or another through life experience or somebody actually lets me know what's going on with what they see, I have that moment to admit that I'm powerless over this thing and that I will remain powerless for the rest of my life over this thing if it is in fact a disease that is progressive and permanent and fatal. I will, in fact, remain powerless unless I am empowered. In other words, a power outside of myself, greater than myself, steps in, is invited in, or just plain steps in, says, Ken, you're coming with me. We're going a different direction. It's time. It's time for you to not be an active compulsive overeater. It's time to be in remission. And here's my promise. We can do this for the rest of your life. Stay with me. Thank you. That's all I have to share. I pass.
Thank you, Ken W.H. from North Carolina. Liz S., good morning. Welcome.
Good morning, Lynn. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, and thank you, everyone, for being at this meeting. Liz S., recovered in Oregon. The shares have been amazing, and thank you, Robin, for starting us off with the first share. The my experience, it talks about in this paragraph that there was a guy who had an overwhelming outside desire to be successful. Well, I never saw myself as a mother of children, but always thought I would have a career. And I started on that path early. And it was really supported in my family. It was the way out of poverty. It was so compelling to do well that, well, I can't equate these, but there was also in my family of no signs of compassion, except my grandma Frida. Now, my grandma Frida and my grandpa Art were young when I was born and were able to take a big part of my life and be in it. And I was so grateful. But grandma helped me equate food with love. She was the most loving person in my life, period. And she gave me treats. I think that contributed to the realization of my disease. I moved then, after a long time, to Los Angeles, where there's a great pressure to be, very attractive physically. I was not the type. I was also very tall. I was 5'11", and I did not fit the mold, which was short and petite and very cute. The thing was also that I had an incredible dislike of the profession I had chosen. That combined with the pressure to look a certain way was a lot of stress. And what I did was I ate a particular food in response. And I remember being in Smith's Food King deciding this isn't going to do me any good to have ice cream, but I went and got it. And so I had to get into a situation where I was retired from my career and I was in a place where I could relax more about my appearance. And then I found visions and the rest was recovery. Thank you very much and I pass.
Thank you, Liz S. from Oregon. We have time for two more shares. Who would like that time, please?
Natalie S.
Okay, Natalie S. Anyone else?
Jean M. from Michigan.
Perfect. Okay, Natalie S. and Jean M. Natalie, please go ahead.
Thanks, Lynn. Yeah, this is Natalie S. calling from Indiana. And this weekend has been really eye-opening. And for me, the idea of admitting who I was, it's just, it's causing me to go back into my childhood and my adulthood. I only came into the program 3 years ago when I was 54. And as I look back, I just remember how much I struggled to identify who I was and how often I would try to make myself to be who other people needed me to be. You know, during my childhood when my mom was home, it was to be who she needed me to be. Then when I got into high school, it was to rebel against who she needed me to be. And that initiated my eating disorder. And then in college, there was freedom to be who I wanted. I had no idea. I grasped at straws and tried different things, and it still didn't work. But the one thing that was consistent that I didn't recognize at that time was, well, you know, I was an athlete, so I could always work off anything I overate. And for a long time when I came into this program, I denied the idea that I ate compulsively, but I did. As I raised my 5 children young as a single mom and worked, I tried to be who they needed me to be at work, who they needed me to be at home, and I failed miserably at both, and I ruined my health. And when I came into these rooms, the recovery for me is in discovering who I am in God's eyes. And that's, I'm recovered in this moment. Am I abstinent? Yes, it's critical for me to be abstinent because that just means that everything is going to go awry. But real recovery for me is staying connected to who I am and who God says I am. And if I can do that moment by moment, I'm in a good headspace. So nothing else really matters. I have clarity and peace. The second I step out, I have to step back into these 12 steps. And if I don't, I get the natural consequence of being disturbed. So I'll just end by saying that I'm just really grateful for this new experience, this new awakening to admit and be grateful for who I am and be at peace with knowing that. And if people, it doesn't always happen, but allowing people to accept or reject me according to their design. It's not my problem. I just need to stay straight in line with what God wants me to do and be. And so I thank you all for being here on this journey with me, and I'll pass.
Thank you, Natalie S. from Indiana. And Jean M., you've got 2 minutes. Please go ahead, Jean.
Good morning. This is Jean M. from Michigan, a compulsive overeater. Thank you, everyone, for your service. And I guess really wanted to just claim my seat and say how much I appreciate all of the health that I hear, the experience, strength, and hope that I hear on the line this morning. And for me, there was no way that I could stop on my own. I needed to surrender completely, and I needed to work this program and work these steps. And I am so grateful for this program, and I'm grateful for these meetings. And with that, I'll pass.
Well, thank you, Jean M. from Michigan. Thank you to everyone who shared, and thank you to Team Monday. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing. And the share ID for this morning, Monday, April the 20th, the 7 a.m. meeting, is 23380. That's 23380. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. Jessica C., would you please read A Vision for You? Our book is meant to be suggestive only.
Thanks, Lynn.
okay. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.